There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along for another hour of live local talk. Reminder, too, show's on the road this week and be traveling tomorrow, but we'll be live in Washington, D.C., in the nation's capital, on Wednesday and Thursday from the Federation for American Immigration Reform event. So we'll be up there, got guests booked. Congressman Carl's going to be on with us. Also, if you've heard in the past couple years when I've been up there, there's a ranching couple. Their ranch is right there on the border in Arizona. The Davises, they'll join me again on the show. Also, Mark Morgan, who is acting commissioner of U.S. Customs Border Enforcement under Trump, he'll be there. Congressman Barry Moore. And I guess I can announce it now. I always call him Senator Sessions. I guess the style book would tell me to call him Attorney General Sessions. Will join us on Thursday as well. But more guests to be named there as well. Jeff's going up. I'm going up. We'll be live from Washington this week. And also, thank you, Jace. Jace was saying about the app. Let me just take a second here. My buddy Sean Powers, Dr. Powers, is in studio. We're going to talk fish here in a second. But, you know, I said anywhere you get a cell signal. The FM Talk 106.5 app, which you can go look for on Google Play if you're an Android user, or if you're one of the fancy Apple folks, just go to the App Store and look for FM TALK 1065. No point between the 6 and 5, just 1065. Well, you'll see our logo. That's our app. It's free. Download it. And you can stream us on there. You can get all our podcasts, 56 hours a week of live local programming. We do show schedules. You can also use it to text the station, call the station, leave us a callback message, and a whole lot more. Traffic up to the minute. Traffic apps on there and weather app through the FM Talk 106.5 app. So go download it. But Jace said, I don't even need the cell Wi-Fi. I listen to the station out in the middle of the Southern Gulf off the coast of Venezuela. So it's interesting each month when they update the app and show me where people are listening from. It's cool. It's like international and nationally, but off the coast of Venezuela. I think Jace wins that one. So y'all try to beat Jace on that, and we'll talk about it more. All right. He's back. I'm glad to see him back in studio. So, and if y'all have fish questions, this is the man to ask him, too. Chair of Marine Sciences Department at the University of South Alabama and senior marine scientist at Dolphin Island Sea Lab and guy that likes to fish and pretty good guy. Dr. Sean Powers, good to see you.
Good seeing you. So I had, unfortunately, I was going to report on our deep water tuna and grouper
trip,
but it got blown out. It was like 5-foot seas. Luckily, we knew ahead of time. So I didn't go out there. I went inshore fishing on Sunday instead with a buddy, a well-established surgeon. I won't say his name.
Okay. How'd y'all do?
We did great until his boat broke down.
And this
friend has kind of a legacy of whenever you go with him,
right,
your boat breaks down. Oh, his boat breaks down. But the good thing is we broke down at a spot where the fish were biting.
That never happens to me. If I break down, it's not where I'm fishing. I think you and I talked the other day off the air. I lost the port engine on the offshore boat, and at least I was within inside the house, though. That was good. And I want to get to inshore fish, too, because I want to talk flounder with you. But before then, a subject you talk about with me a whole bunch, and it holds the imagination of a lot of folks, interest of a lot of folks, and that's red snapper. The quota that we were fishing this year that was fairly close to what the quota was last year, right?
Yep, about 1 million pounds, I think.
And we're not anywhere close to fishing it through.
Correct. I mean, the last time I heard from Director Bannon, I don't think we were even halfway through, but that was a little while ago. So, yeah, I think the odds are we won't hit the quota.
That's what's, and that's what is so important, I think, about state management, too, in this, is taking into factors how to apply the dates to catch that quota. Because in this case, I think, this is my opinion, I don't know, it's not been vetted out yet, but gasoline prices had something to do with the slower fishing of the quota. Right? I mean, when you look at the prices of gasoline filling up at a marina, I talked about this during the boat show when we were all getting ready for the season. I said, if prices stay this high, it's not that people are going to stop, but if I'm going to go Saturday or Sunday, I may just go Saturday and Sunday go sit on the sandbar. You know? And I wonder if that helped bring, because I know there's other scientific things you're going to talk about in average size, but I wonder if that also, we fish through the quota more slowly because instead of doing two trips a week, somebody does one.
So, and again, this is information that Marine Resources tracks. There's definitely less trips. So, okay. So we're not worried about necessarily the resource. There are definitely a lot less trips that were taken this year. Now, the single most deterministic factor of trips is wind in the first part of the season. So, Memorial Day, couple of first weekends in June, we didn't have really good conditions.
Right.
So that's really where a lot of effort takes place. So because wind was high and the seas were rough, and also I think because people had knowledge that the quota would stay around, so they didn't have to go. They
and this could is the wait. Human side, right?
Because could wait for a better day, and that is great because people do not need to be going out there and pushing their boats and pushing themselves because we won't lose that quota. People will.
You don't have that derby mentality that exactly. We did in those very short seasons.
So I think that is a wonderful thing about state management. It's so important that everybody stay safe and enjoy mm-hmm. themselves. Gas prices, I'm not sure. We've had
different
arguments with people that, you know, by the time you factor in all the expenses with fishing, does $40 more in gas, is that going to stop?
But if it's double, okay, but, and, you know, if it's double the prices, this is anecdotal, although this audience, I'm looking at people right now on the text line, like this one said, Snapper isn't worth $5 a gallon, but for me, it's not that I wouldn't go. I did go, but I might not make two trips. I might make one, gotcha. Right? So I'm still going. I'm not going to not go, but I'm going to, because if it's, once it starts, if I see $600 show up, you know, on the, you know, where, as we're filling the boat up at the marina, God bless you all at the marina. But if I see $600, I have some heart palpitations, Dr. Powers. It's, you know, and I think I'm not the only one. I think I do represent this zone. Now, there's people it doesn't matter. You're right. I mean, by the time you're spending $750,000 on a boat and everything, it is insignificant. Yeah. But there's a lot of 25-foot boat owners like me, you know, twins, smaller, you know, cuddy cabins or center consoles. They're going out that, yeah, you know, I mean, can we do one day like that? Yeah, maybe two. Yeah, I don't know. Kids got to eat, you know?
No, and the great thing about this is we can, you know, do kind of an autopsy on, on the fisheries season. And Colonel Bannon is wonderful about giving us resources to look into. And I'm sure he'll ask us, survey the fishermen, survey the stakeholders, see what it was this year.
Because I don't disagree on the rough. 100% I agree on the rough conditions.
We'll have that information on. And then, again, the wonderful thing about state management is that Marine Resources can then look at, okay, what's the stakeholders' concern? If it is gas and we expect gas to either stay high, maybe they have to, you know, increase bag limits, decrease sizes, mm-hmm. something to encourage those fishermen to go out and use the resources. But I know, you know, with our help, they're constantly exploring that and constantly trying to optimize the fishery for the stakeholders. And that's the great thing about Snapper right now. And we can talk about average size. We can talk about a variety of things. But state management allows everybody to optimize it for their stakeholders.
Right, which is flexibility that yep. wasn't there before. Let's talk about that formula, too. The people that have not, that don't know this or have not heard us talk about this before, Dr. Powers, that formula, the average size of the snapper in a given year is part of this equation mm-hmm. for tonnage and days. As that changes how fast or how slowly you go through the tonnage changes, correct?
Correct.
So, give us a word problem. Yeah, we're
well, no, I mean, so the quota is still set by the federal government, the overall quota for the Gulf of Mexico, and recreationals get about half of that quota. Commercials get half. A section is removed for the charter boat industry now. And so of that recreational catch, they then divide it based on history for the different states. So then the state has that quota. And like I said, it's about 1 million pounds now for the wrecks in Alabama. Yeah, obviously, if you have a bigger fish, you eat up that quota faster. And that's why we got into this loop in 2015, 16, 17, where the sizes were getting so big on the snapper, we were eating up the quota so quickly, and then it feeds back on itself. Then the seasons are short,
right?
So the average size gets
bigger.
Even bigger,
right?
So yes. So right now, you know, one of the reasons our season is long is because two fish don't weigh what they weighed in.
What is our average for this year for 2022?
You know, I don't know exactly what the average is. I would guess it's around 6.87 pounds.
Weren't we at 8 at one point?
Oh yeah, we were higher. I mean, we were approaching 9. But again, everybody's got to remember, because we hear this feedback from the fishermen, the fish were so much bigger 5 years ago. Well, we were coming off 9-11 day federal seasons, and yes, the fish are gonna stay in the water and continue to grow. And so, if you want that big of a size, we know that you will compromise and have a shorter season.
But it seems like more people, though, that I talk to, as long as they're getting them above 16 inches and keeper, would, and this is just me anecdotally, that people would opt for a smaller average size fish for more days to get to go.
Correct. And the reason we can have this, and the reason the Marine Resource Agency can make this decision, is because we're monitoring and we see lots of juveniles fish in the population. So it isn't, we still have the number of snapper. We can argue over what we want the average size to be. But as long as I see that number of snapper coming into the population every year that's high, that indicates to us that the state has the flexibility to manage it like that. Obviously, if we see the number, the recruitment going down, then we would alert the state that...
But the recruitment is good.
The recruitment is good. In fact, most of our remotely operated vehicle surveys, because that's where you see the smaller, less than 16-inch snapper, show an increase abundance of small snapper. And that might be because the big ones are removed from the population, largely, where we're looking. It could be a variety of things that are very cool science issues. But for management, you know, we look at recruitment, make sure recruitment is good. And then we know from experience, all you have to do is dial the fishing pressure back a couple of years, and you'll return a couple of levels, and you'll return to this big average size fish. It's just that you would have to give up number of days. And that's the balance equation that luckily Scott Bannon has to deal with, not me.
You just give the information. Just joining us, talking to Dr. Sean Powers. Okay, this question as we go on the news break, because it's funny, I'm looking through all the questions coming up, and Don's asking the question. Don, I asked this one of Dr. Powers when he walked in before we went on the air, because we're talking about this quota. We'll fish through the end of the year, most likely. It looks like nothing's going to change. Don says, two questions for Dr. Powers. So does a snapper quota transfer to next year? So the same question I asked you, if we don't fish it out, do we get it for next year?
So overages transfer to next year. So if we went over, we would have a payback clause. Underages do not.
It's a raw deal.
Well, I mean,
Sean, that's a raw deal. It's a raw deal, man. I'm protesting. I know you're not in that business. I'm in the business of protesting. And Ash says, sharks, I lost as many snapper to sharks as I brought home.
That is, we're hearing more and more of that from fishermen, and we've talked about that. Shark populations in our surveys, again, the state pays in addition to snapper, but also for shark surveys for us to do. Sharks are increasing in abundance. It's an active choice on the part of National Marine Fisheries Service. They're trying to rebuild those shark populations. And yes, there are more and more sharks bite offs being reported.
So, as all this goes into the formula, then we'll see what comes of it. We come back. I want to talk about it. Don also had a flounder question, so you and I get to talk some flounder. And Sport Fishing Magazine, interview with you about redfish?
Yeah.
I love talk redfish. Can we do that when we come back?
Sure.
All right. More with Dr. Sean Powers next, right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. And it's always good to get Dr. Sean Powers in, and so many questions coming in. First of all, let me jump to this flounder question before we go any farther. Question for the text line. All right, seriously, with the number of flounder and the size of flounder increasing, which I mean, I'm anecdotally, you know, just as a fisherman, this year's been good. I worry I'd knock, watch me knock on wood, like, as I say it. But, yeah, it says, with the numbers of flounder and the size of flounder increasing, will we ever return to legal recreational flounder fishing in November and December?
Well, we may. I mean, those rules were put in with the idea that we would rebuild the stock of flounder, which I think everybody agreed was depressed 2 or 3 years ago. And then we would look at those regulations again, and the state would decide that, you know, is it look like it's sustainable without those closures. But I think we're far off from that. I mean, I've heard from everybody else. I have a student, Dylan Keene, who works on the flounder along with Marine Resources. And all indications are it's increasing. And that's great to see. We haven't seen the indexes of abundance. The state does a large systematic gillnet survey. And we haven't seen the index of abundance increase. But we are about to – I was talking to Kevin Anson at Marine Resources, their chief biologist, and we're going to update the stock assessment next spring, this spring coming up. So we'll have a better idea of are those things we're doing being positive. And I know anecdotally from fishermen it is, but obviously we want to see the stock assessment increase, and that will give us an idea of how long a rebuilding trajectory will take. So it's definitely a positive sign. And I'll tell you one thing, it shows an example that I talk to my colleagues in this that deal with other states and the federal government, and people are surprised at this because they all have their opinions on Alabama. And, you know, that our Marine Resource Agency is so science-driven. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really does. So when we have results and we share them with them, we usually get immediate action. My colleagues are just amazed at how quickly our science results in management action. And that's not the norm.
Well, but you know what? The Dolphin Island Sea Lab and the Marine Sciences Department, University of South Alabama, they aren't in every state either.
That's true, but it takes both sides. And this goes all the way back to both when Commissioner Blankenship and I started in our kind of administrative life in 2010, 2011. It was a real partnership. And that is unique. Now, it doesn't always work in the fishermen's favor because we obviously mm-hmm. – Yeah, you know, we have more restrictions on flounder, but it usually
but
works
it does
in the resources'
term. Right.
favor.
So. Which eventually benefits us, the fishermen.
Yeah.
I mean, because you heard, I mean, the worry was real about flounder populations.
Correct.
I mean, right, amongst, you know, recreational folks like myself and yourself, right, worried about those numbers. So I think if you give somebody a formula that we can do this, this, and this, and then within some period of time, years, it bears fruit, I think you get a lot more buy-in from the recreational community on the next thing you want to do.
Correct. And it's always, you know, there's always people who are concerned. In this case, it was some of the commercial fishermen for flounder that had real concern that we're imposing these regulations on them. You know, on the flip side, on the red snapper, it was really the commercial fishermen who championed all the conservation mm-hmm. measures. So it's very species-specific and stakeholder group. But I think everybody agrees that right now, anecdotally, the flounder is better. And hopefully we see that it's a result of these management actions, as well as the hatchery operation at Claude Petit.
Right, which I've got 30 seconds before the break, but that is hatching boys, right? Males? What's needed in the, you know, more than females, right?
So they hatch both.
But what is needed more in the...
It depends. Well, I'll get back to you on that one. There's some suggestion that more males are needed, but that hasn't been borne out totally.
So we'll get that one. But we come back, we're talking about redfish, and I also want to talk about the importance of marsh here in our system. Coming right back, more with Dr. Sean Powers.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. This segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. That's my buddy Trey Bennett. Been doing it for, well, if we're getting ready to go into our 14th year, he'll be with his 15th year of serving your homes, your businesses, your storage units in Mobile and Baldwin County. If you've got junk and you want it gone, you need 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And a lot of people get hung up thinking, okay, well, the box is in the attic or the stuff that's in the guest room. They do that quite well, but they are storage unit full of stuff, but they handle like big stuff too. Like that's the things Trey and I will talk about. He's like, you would like, this is a huge storage building in the backyard. He said, we got that. Trampolines, above ground pools. Yeah, we got that. As I've often said, if you have a swing set, the big Ponderosa Pine swing set with the Pirates Lookout Tower on it, and your youngest child's in graduate school, time to let it go. And let the crew from 1-800-GOT-JUNK come and get rid of it. Appointments are great because they're a real appointment, easy to set. You can go online to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com or pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. The name is the number. They'll find a day that works for you, a window of time that works for you, and they set an appointment. It's none of this sometime between Monday at 8 and Friday at midnight. No, there's a time because they know you got a job and family and all that stuff. They show up. You point at the stuff you want gone. They quote you a price right there on the spot. If you say yes, they get to work and get it done right then. So check them out today. Get something booked for this week. Get the junk gone. 1-800-GOT-JUNK online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Continue the conversation with my friend, Dr. Sean Powers. And first of all, I want to go to the Sport Fishing magazine article first because this is out. People can check it out. You're talking about redfish or red drum, as they're officially known, right?
Correct.
Red drum. And just interesting things that you and I have talked about just as we're riding out in a boat or something like that, the things that make them cool, right? I mean, from the noises they make to the ages they get to the fact that they can live in fresh water, this stuff's cool.
No, it is. And you know, hopefully we could continue with that kind of Q&A with the magazine because they have, you know, just like you, they have readers that or listeners that just have lots of questions. So I've worked a relationship with this reporter or journalist, and he just wants to find out what is truth and what is fiction. I mean, so
when they drum, how are they doing that?
So they have muscles close to their swim bladder that it's just like anything else. They're contracting and relaxing those muscles really quick, and then so that creates, you know, air waves or sound waves.
They're banging them together.
Mm-hmm. For the most part, yeah.
And that's what's making the noise. So, but everybody says, well, it's just, you know, you'll hear whether we're talking about speckled trout, which are related, or red drum. Well, it's only the males that do that.
So it's not always. In the case of red drum, it is. So it is the males, and that frequency becomes much more at the time of spawning.
Right.
So, speckled trout, males and females, do it. The males tend to do it a lot more. But
you ruined this for everybody growing up here on the Gulf Coast because you grew up fishing inshore too. We're always like, well, that's buck trout. He's drumming. Not always.
All I have to say is people should do their own experiment. So if it's drumming and you think it's a male, open it up and I bet you will, with some frequency, find eggs in that specimen. So it's largely males. Croakers, it's every croaker that makes that sound. And some do it different for different reasons. You know, most of it's associated with spawning. So, but all members of speckled trout, croaker, red drum are all in the drum family, the cyanid family, and they're given their name because they make that drum noise.
What about redfish in fresh water? Can they exist?
Sure.
I mean, the Lake Shelby effect, or, you know, I know there's lakes in Texas that have them.
Yeah, so a little bit of salinity, you know, a half a part per thousand, one part per thousand.
That's not, could you even taste that?
No, you couldn't. So for your listeners, full strength salinity is about 36 parts per thousand. But they can live just fine. Now, they tend not to be able to reproduce. So in a aquaculture setting, that actually works to the benefit because those fish aren't putting in any effort into reproduction. It's all
putting
into
weight on
what we call somatic body growth. And so they're putting weight on very quickly. So for reproduction, the larvae and the eggs, they need salinity. But the actual redfish doesn't need salinity.
So this whole thing where, you know, people will be shocked sometimes, somebody catches, and I know there's other lakes, but Lake Shelby's one that, you know, people are like, I can't believe it. There's a redfish in Lake Shelby. They're living.
No.
They get blown in by a storm or whatever, and they're doing their thing. Could I turn one loose in a pond that I have? I mean, is, you know, that's not even close to the Gulf? Do you think, I mean, there has to be some amount
of salinity? They would live for a while. I mean, like I said, but there's some areas, like in the Black Belt, that a lot of their aquifers have some salinity in them. So you could absolutely have a healthy redfish population there.
Pretty cool.
I've been trying to convince the university to let me stock them on campus, but they haven't yet. So.
Well, hey, university, listen, that would be cool. That would have people like me coming out to see them a whole bunch. And, you know, as we're talking about it, too, in that interview, one of the great things about redfish is that they're not always red. They're really not red. I mean, they're, you know, kind of a gold or a copper color. The variety of color differences from some that along the beach I've caught, and I know you've caught, that you're like, dang, that thing's almost silver, to one I catch back at a duck pond or something like that, looks like a brand new penny.
Yeah.
Same fish.
They'll show a range of color. And what's amazing to me is when you get that brilliant blue tail.
Yes.
On them, it's just so pretty.
What makes that? I always said is they're eating more crabs. Does that? Am I just making stuff up?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. Like I said, the diet definitely is responsible for controlling the hormones that control their color. So that diet, they're not absolutely like other species trying to camouflage themselves. It's a lot influenced by the diet of that habitat. And as I said in that article...
So wait a second, there's some valid... Is there any validity to me on the boat telling everybody that's because he's been eating a bunch of crabs?
Absolutely. Now, how true that is, like I said, in the magazine,
don't ruin it for me.
It's up to your readers because they have a lot more experience. They know if they caught it in seagrass or the delta
right. And
what colors it come. I mean, to me, the more brilliant colors, just my angling experience, come when you catch them in seagrass. They get that copper color with that blue tail.
It's gorgeous.
But
all right. Before I got like 2 minutes here, this will be a conversation for the future, but it's not a new story, but I was reading something the other day. I think they're saying 53,000 acres of marsh are lost annually in Louisiana.
I would believe it, yeah.
And we haven't figured... They're trying things to mitigate and all that, but how important does that make keeping what we have around here?
You know, that makes
to
it...
To the system in general.
Even more... I mean, obviously, one of the reasons the whole north central Gulf of Mexico is so productive is because you have lots of juvenile fish habitat. And in our neck of the woods, that's largely salt marsh. It can be seagrass, but that's not as common in our system. Right. It can be oyster reefs, but that's not as common. You know, so that makes it very, very important. Now, most of what we know about red drum and speckled trout is they really don't mix between Louisiana and
their home bodies, yeah.
So unless there's a big storm or something like that. But it does make it more and more important to conserve. And I know it's just a challenge in Louisiana. There are some areas, like off the Atchafalaya, that are actually increasing.
Like down at Wax Lake and all that.
But most of it's being lost at an alarming rate. So
we have issues of loss of salt marsh here, but we don't have the same issues they have in Louisiana.
Correct. We generally don't have as much subsidence as they do. The geology of our area is a little different.
We don't have the canals they do either, do we?
We haven't had the legacy of oil and gas exploration in that shallow areas that Louisiana has. So, yes, we don't have as many pressures, but we do have pressures. I mean,
sure,
erosion,
just
coastal erosion, sea level rise is definitely a pressure. But development, you know, is a real... pressure. The other thing is the hardening of the shoreline. So a lot of rocks, a lot of, you know, when you put that in, you know, the marsh can't naturally retreat with sea level rise. It's a hard stop, essentially. So, no, that's probably one of our biggest challenges is just sea level rise and then the hardening and developing of shorelines.
And we'll we're out of time for this time, but I would like to talk about, you know, if there are incentives or things to do, because I think there are people when they hear that and want to do that would say, help me take that seawall out. Let me return natural, you know, natural bank there. And hopefully it helps. So
no, we've had a lot of luck with local property owners that go into living shorelines, and even living shorelines in front of their bulkheads can help.
Because it'd be a lot easier than me. Have you ever seen me balance weed eating a seawall? It is not a pretty sight, Dr. Powers. As always, I appreciate your time. Thanks for stopping in.
Thank you.
All right, Chair of Marine Sciences Department at the University of South Alabama, Senior Marine Scientist at Dolphin Island Sea Lab. Fisherman, all-around good guy. Dr. Sean Powers, we'll get him back soon. All right, coming right back, a conversation about what we had in hour number one and the fentanyl epidemic and opioids in our community. We'll do that with folks from AltaPoint next.